Hello there, you're welcome to another interesting edition of Sports Africana, where we'll bring you the best of sports, particularly from an African perspective. My name is Oba Adeola, and today we're going to be talking to a former footballer. He played for Norwich City and was part of the famous Super Eagles of Nigerian USA 94 squad. Talking about no other person than Efan Ekoku. Just Efan joined us on Sport Africana, and we're going to be linking up with him very soon. So I implore you to fasten your seatbelt and listen to this interview. We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us, Efan, for joining Sport Africana. It's been a long time for me. It's a privilege to have you on Sport Africana. How are you doing today?
I'm very good, very well. Thanks very much. Yeah, good afternoon, good morning, Nigeria, Africa in general. Nice to see everybody.
Say a Nigerian greeting slang to your Nigerian brothers out there.
Oh, no, well done, Oh. It's been a long time.
Yeah, really long time.
Don't say when I see you now.
that's more like it. It's such a wonderful pleasure to have you. I've known you as far back as 92-93 when you were playing for Norwich. So give us a little background about how you started and your football journey from the academy from secondary school to the academy to the first. Yeah. How did it start?
Okay, well, very different to most people who make the professional ranks. No academy, no football in secondary school, no apprenticeship, as it was called then when I was a young man, because I went to a rugby playing school. So I didn't play football for a long time. Obviously, I played, when I was very young, but I stopped playing really properly when I was about 13. I just used to play with my friends on a Sunday. But once I went to secondary school, we played rugby. So no football in school. So we were a rugby playing school. I know rugby is not big in Nigeria anyway. It's not big in Africa, except Southern Africa. So for most young black boys growing up in England, football is what they played. Anything else was always seen as secondary. But for me, rugby was what I played for 4 or 5 years in school. So football was always my number one love, but not my number one event or sport, to play. So yeah, I joined, professional ranks after I went back home. I went to Nigeria, came back when I was 20, and then I just started playing.
You actually went back to Nigeria?
Yeah, I went back to Nigeria when I was 16. I was there for 4 years.
Maybe you're probably stubborn, and your parents thought that we need to do some African training.
I'm silently stubborn for sure. It's not always visible, but we all have our way of showing our determination. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So obviously, how did you now get in? Because that trajectory into football, football kid is quite tough. I remember I spoke to Danny Shitu some years back. He too had the same role. He played volleyball at some point in time before.
Yeah.
Football. How did you break into football eventually?
Well, I just came back to London and knew that I wanted to be active again, knew that I wanted to play sport. I wasn't sure whether I would go into track and field. I was very good at track and field when I was at school. I was long jump champion, when I was in Liverpool, Merseyside champion when I was 16. So I had a choice. I was good, I was a good hurdler as well. High hurdler, but it would have meant it would have been quite easy. But I didn't have really. I had more of a love for football, so that was always easier for me to go back into. Rugby would have been a choice as well. But you follow your heart, or we used to follow our heart now, and that was a straightforward choice for me. And obviously here in England is a very sophisticated society with regards to sports, but especially with regards to football. There's so many football clubs, not only professional ones, but semi-professional or completely amateur, you know, then you could just ring up a football club and invite yourself down almost for training. And that's what I did, you know, basically. Local club to where my grandmother lived. I just called them up, not because I knew anything about them at all, just because they were the closest. You know, I just wanted somewhere to go and train and play and start enjoying and being active again. And that's what I did. I went there. They were quite a good Lomley club with a good history. Sutton United, which is not far from Wimbledon. You know, most people will know, at least of the area, you know, of Wimbledon, you know, lawn tennis, etc. And yeah, I went there. I started playing. I started training. I started playing. I was working. I was sort of in and out. Within a year, then, you know, I did well enough. Within a year or so, I was attracting lots of attention from professional clubs. And then, you know, at the end of my first full season, I signed professional down at Bournemouth, which is 1990, you know. But I actually signed when I was 22. I signed professional forms when I was 22 in the May of, 2000 something, but I'm older than that. 1990, I signed May, but I didn't make my debut until I was 23 because my birthday is in the summer, June. So yeah, so by the time we got to August, I was already 23. So I was a late start, you know, I'm playing catch up, you know, with guys, you know, who've been professional since 17 or some from 16 even, you know, so that's a long, you know, that's a big chunk that, you know, you've missed.
Wow. So if you made a debut with Bournemouth in 1990, as stated,
yeah,
within a space of 3 years, you were raving. I mean, we got to know you. I mean, there was no social media back then. There was no internet and everything. We got to know about you through a Nigerian football magazine called Complete Football.
And yeah, I know. Yeah.
We're told about this Efan Ekoku, who is banging in goals for Norwich, playing alongside the likes of Chris Sutton, Gary Megson, and many other players. And Norwich were at the top, and which around coincided with the beginning of the Premier League at the time.
Yeah.
So how did you make a such rave in such short time?
Well, you know, the first thing is that, you know, you have to be good. It's a simple thing. that's a basic requirement. You know, you have to be good enough. And secondly is belief, which comes very, very close behind. And then determination. So if you have all those things, it doesn't matter what age you are, there's a way. You may not reach the very top of the game, but there's a chance that you'll be at a much better level than when you first started. So that was always my aim. In a way, you know, I didn't plan it. I just knew that it would take a few steps. And, you know, you have to go through the process in a sporting life. You know, you can't force things, you know, you can, but you can make a lot of errors. You may make some errors anyway, but you know, you'll be trying to run before you can walk properly. And the first 3 years at Bournemouth, I was injured quite a lot, actually. I think, you know, I wasn't used to professional sport for one, so my body didn't know how to sort of take it. Then, as opposed to now, professional clubs are not as well educated in many ways in terms of rehab, in terms of fitness, in terms of diet, in terms of training. Especially clubs who are in the lower leagues, you know, Bournemouth now are quite a well-funded club. You know, they have lots of money.
And I think at the time, that was Redknapp was the coach, if I'm right.
Harry Redknapp was the head coach, yeah. You know, Bournemouth had no money, was, you know, procuring players from non-league. I came from non-league. You know, quite a lot of the squad was from non-league. You know, my best friend, you know, came, he's from non-league. A few other guys came from non-league, and it was a club who was always, as soon as they were able to get a player that played well for, or, you know, developed from non-league, or someone they got from another team, if they were able to improve them, they sold them on. And, you know, so the club was certainly poorly funded. So a big learning curve, you know. So, yeah. So, as I said, you know, it was a challenge. And also, when your body's not ready for it or not used to professional sport, like I said, I was playing with guys who've been, you know, training and playing with guys who've been professionals for 4 or 5 years over that. And that's part of the group. Also playing with hardened veterans, if you like, you know, my age already and people who are older. So yeah, I have a lot of injuries. In the space of 3 years, I only played 71 games. That's nothing. In English football, you can play 50 games in one season. So really, you know, the progress I made was pretty good, really. You know, 70 games and then to get a Premier League club, you know, after that. Was nice. It was a nice step. It was a nice step, but I always felt that if I'd been fit and been able to learn everything more quickly in that first year, I would have been in the Premier League probably 2 years earlier.
So how did you get into Norwich? What was the feeling like when you eventually get to know that Norwich was interested in you? And if I'm right, the manager at the time was Mike Walker.
Yeah, Mike Walker. All happened very quickly, actually. I was injured the first half of the season. So this is 92 from I had an operation at the end of the 91-92 season. And I didn't start training again. I remember with the first team or even training at all again until about October. I had ankle surgery. And so by the time I was back with the first team in Bournemouth, it was just before Christmas, I think. Yeah, maybe about middle of December. Yeah, something like that. And then I was back with the first team, you know, very, very quickly. You know, when you're on the key menu, you know, they always used to rush us back, you know, a few weeks training, whether you've been out for 5 weeks or for 5 months within. Once they see you on the training ground, you know, the head coach, he starts to pester the physiotherapist, starts to pester you, you know, are you fit, are you ready to play, all that kind of stuff. And when you're a little bit inexperienced or very inexperienced like me still, even though I was 24, 25, then you can easily be leaned on. I was always someone who, you know, who was always desperate to play, who was always ready to play, who was always quite fit anyway, even though I've been out for quite a long time. So I rushed myself back because I wanted to play also. And within a few games, I scored some good goals. I played well enough. I played well in the FA Cup against the Premier League team, against Blackburn. I scored. So that raises your profile. You know, the FA Cup was huge then. It's not quite as big now, but then it was still a huge event. So that's, you know, that sort of makes people realise, okay, wow, you know, it's a guy that we've not seen before, a guy we've seen before, weren't sure, you know, whether he could make it, he could play against the top players in the country, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you know, the back end of the season, you know, Norwich, all of a sudden, I think it was the day before, 2 days before deadline day, which used to be March then, towards the end of March, they came in with a bid. Bournemouth accepted it, gave me permission to travel up to Norwich, and off I went. So I think they've been working with each other behind the scenes, you know, they've been colluding already. But, you know, they didn't let me know. I'm sure of that now. At the time, I didn't know. So it came as a bit of a surprise, not because I didn't think that I was capable. I knew I was, but I thought I would be playing till the end of the season with Bournemouth, you know, then.
So you've got to find out about your move on the BBC teletext, isn't it?
Well, I got a call through my agent. So I had an agent back then, and he said, look, you know, first of all, I got a notification through Tony Pulis, who was manager by then. He called me and said, look, you know, we've had an offer from Bournemouth and from Norwich, and we've accepted it. So I was like, oh, wow, really? Okay. Did anybody want to tell me? You know, kind of thing. You know, I could have stayed and waited until the end of the season and seen what else was around, see if anyone else was interested. I knew some other teams were. Or, you know, I could have taken the opportunity and thought, you know, let's go. Let's take an opportunity to take the next step, next level. So, yeah, I went down there. I went across there, I should say, and I signed, I think, the next day.
Wow. You actually look like a Tony Pulis kind of player. Big, strong, you know, that can use the head.
Yeah. Yeah, Tony likes, he likes athletes. He likes people who can physically compete. You know, you still need, you know, the tools, you know, the skills and everything, but he likes people who, you know, can handle themselves.
Great. So, and of course, your Norwiches were quite successful. You struck a very good partnership with Chris Sutton, and you ended up in Europe. Give us a brief, your brief period in Norwich, how it was like. I mean, that's probably you played one of your best football during that period.
Yeah, Norwich was a great experience. It was a bit mixed because I went there with great hopes of being in the team from day one, really. It took me a while to break into the team. The team was doing really well. They were top of the league when I signed. It was only about six games to go before the end of that season. So Norwich actually spent more weeks on top of the Premier League that season than Manchester United, who actually won, because they were top, yeah, I think, from about October, November, December, January, most of February, and even up until March when I signed. But, you know, the crunch time is at the end, you know, the last sort of 10 games. And the last 10 games, you know, the team didn't perform well enough, you know, so finished third. So it was great to be involved with that kind of atmosphere, with that kind of expectation, in a way, if you like. But it was disappointing as well that I didn't start my first game until the last game of the season. So I had 5 games on the bench, I think, before I started my last game of the season. I started the last game of the season. So disappointing, you know, to miss out. But I didn't really feel truly part of the whole campaign, obviously, because I wasn't there. It would have been nice to have won, of course. It would have been great. But, you know, that was just my... That was the appetizer, really. You know, I was just about to show people what I could do. And so it took until the next season, which was a few months away. So I spent a few months kicking my heels, you know, waiting, you know, being desperate for pre-season, you know, to really show my worth.
Great. And, of course, later on, you moved to Wimbledon, which you moved to probably in 94. But I will now go to the bit that interests a lot of my fellow Nigerians. Again, we were hearing about FN Koku, you know, banging in goals that played in the UEFA Cup. So how did you get the invitation? Personally, I didn't even think you were going to come, obviously, because I didn't know much about your connection to Nigeria at the time, apart from the fact that you are Nigerian, I'm British, but Nigerian. And prior to that, we've had the like John Kibiole, Emeka Wanjobi, Ruben Agbola, and John Fashanu at some point tried playing for Nigeria as well too. So we're kind of familiar with British-born Nigerians or British-bred Nigerian football players playing for Nigeria. How did you get the invitation? How did you get to know that there was interest in you?
Within a few games of the following season, so my first full season at Norwich, probably within about 4 or 5 games, I started the season on the bench. I wasn't in the team, but once I broke into the team, then obviously I hit the ground running. You know, I scored in a few games. I scored 4 in one game, scored in the UEFA Cup. And, you know, very quickly, you know, things change, you know, things can escalate, things can look bright. And obviously with Nigeria on the verge of World Cup qualification, Clemens Westerhoff was keen, you know, to bolster the squad, make it stronger, have more competition for places. So I came to his attention very quickly. I think they must have called the football club or something. So called Norwich and made contact. And I spoke with him. The first time I met him was after a UEFA Cup game. We played Vitesse Arnhem. I think it was a return leg. So, yeah, I had a chat with him after that. You know, he just said, you know, what he was trying to do, where the national team was, etc., with qualification. I think he just needed one more victory, you know, to confirm everything. And yeah, you know, I was keen. I was obviously very keen. I was very proud, you know, to be asked. And but then it took a while, you know, it took up until the following year, you know, calendar year before I first arrived and met with the squad.
Great. So you now go to the squad proper. Now, I think your first main competition was the African Cup of Nations.
Okay. Yeah.
1994. What was it like for you as soon as you stepped in camp? I mean, where did you meet up with the team first before going to Tunisia? And how was it like for you joining the Super Eagles at the time?
Good question. You're testing my memory now. Where did I first meet up? Maybe in Portugal.
Okay.
Or something like that. I had a training camp in Portugal or Spain. I can't remember.
It was Spain.
Say again.
Was it Spain?
Maybe in Spain, yeah. I can't remember, yeah. Yeah, so I went, I think we had a week's training camp. I'm not sure if we played any matches, so that was my first introduction, you know, to everybody. I knew a few of the names, obviously. Stephen Keshi, one or two of the older guys who've been around. But I've not met anybody before. I didn't know anybody, obviously not being educated in the Nigerian football system either. You know, I was new to them, new faces, new names, almost everybody. Yeah, so I was a newcomer, you know, fresh meat, as we say.
And how's the reception like? I mean, how did you, it's been a, obviously, majority of them were playing professionally at the time in Europe. So how was it like for you being a British-bred, raised football player, integrating into the team? How was it like? How was the reception like with the other members of the team?
Yeah, you know, the guys were friendly enough. Obviously, there's competition for places when they know that there's someone else, you know, coming in. You know, people, especially in your position, are not too happy to see you. You know, they might not always say it, but they certainly show it in different ways. And so you have to be sure. You have to be sure about yourself. You have to be sure about your ability, sure about your belief that you belong there. So that was never a problem, you know, for me. Obviously, I was behind in the pecking order because I was a newbie in the camp. You know, so I knew that, you know, you'd be stupid if you don't recognize that. But also you have to realize that they also know about you. You know, I was playing in one of the toughest leagues and doing very well. So, you know, they must have seen what I was doing or known about what I was doing. And so that respect is there instantly, you would think and you would hope. And then, but also you have to prove that you belong, and your performances in training, wearing a national jersey, going back to your club, playing week in, week out, your goals record, everything, all that kind of stuff, all those things confirm your status as a good player. So it's obviously different for me a bit because I wasn't raised in Nigeria, but, you know, the boys soon found out that, you know, I could speak Pidgin, no problem. So, I think that always made them feel a bit more okay. You know, he's like one of us, no problem. You know, so yeah, and I'm a straightforward guy. You know, there's no agenda with me. You know, what you see is what you get most of the time, anyway. And so I don't play games. You know, if I like you, I like you. If I don't, it's because you've done something, you know, to upset me. And, you know, but we can still be respectful. And, yeah, you know, that's... But top-level sport is not an easy place. It's a very tough environment. And you have to be strong enough, like I said, by yourself. You have to be strong enough to deal with other people. And, you know, you get to know how things operate. Things operate differently within an Nigerian camp than they do within a domestic camp, you know, playing for Norwich or playing for Wimbledon or playing for anybody, playing for AC Milan, Real Madrid, it doesn't matter. Every camp, every football club, it's different. There are certain things, you know, that are the same. There's the basic formula, but the dynamics are different, especially if you are, you know, used to a European style, European education in a way. You know, when you come back to Africa, you know, things are different. You know, they were very, very different then. I think they're probably more close to the line now, but I don't know for sure because I'm not involved with the camp. But I would imagine that there's still some major differences.
So your first competition, like AFCON, you didn't particularly start in the game the first three games, but you came on the game. You played in the quarterfinals against.
Yeah, that was the only game I played. Yeah,
the only game you played. And from my perspective, it seemed you struggled in that game, or was a case of not getting enough game time to show yourself. Just talk us through your experience in Tunisia.
Well, I remember I think I was available for the first game. Then I got injured. I was injured during the tournament. So you didn't know that, did you?
No, I did.
So that's for you now. Yeah, that's news. I was injured. So the first three games, I don't think I was even available. I had an ankle injury. And so all of a sudden then being thrust into the quarterfinal, you are, you know, first of all, you're not fit. Secondly, you're not sharp. And I've always been a very fit guy. Within a few days of training, I can only get back up to speed or close to, you know. And I remember the first half, I felt a little bit, felt tired. No, not tired, just not sharp. A bit off the pace. But by the end of the first half, I could feel myself, you know, feeling stronger. And then the second half, you know, I think I only played about 20 minutes second half. Because you know yourself, I know my body. I know how I operate. The longer the game was going on, you know, the better I was feeling. And but then he decided, you know, to take me off, and you know, so that was the only action I got. So I wasn't best pleased. I may be fit actually for a second and a third game. I went to see him and told him, listen, I'm not here just for the ride. I'm not here just to enjoy Tunisia and sun. In fact, it's not very hot here, you know. I can go back to Nigeria and enjoy the sun. So, you know, so I came to play, you know. I'm used to playing every week. I didn't come, you know, just for holiday. And I think maybe I forced his hand in playing me in the quarterfinal. But yeah, so I always felt that I deserved more of a chance, but then sometimes you have to do something extra special with the opportunity that you're given. But as I said, when you don't play the first three games and you don't have that match fitness or sharpness, it's very hard to impress all of a sudden. And yeah, so that's that. You know, that was probably the great opportunity for me to do something extra special. But it's not easy. And then if you don't get the opportunity to play in the semi-final or final, then even more difficult. So yeah, despite the fact we won, I didn't really feel enough of a part of the squad or the team, because that's just, you know, that's human nature. You know, I felt that way for sure. I know I can't speak 100% for anybody else, but I'm pretty sure that Victor felt the same way. You know, we were going through the same experience. And
Victor at the time was winning goals for Monaco.
Yeah. You know, but you know, we had a very good squad. Mm. As soon as I met up with the squad and saw the quality of the team and the players, I knew that the only way that we cannot win this, you know, tournament is if we play for them, you know. So it wasn't possible. We could have played two teams and interchanged anybody, moved anybody about. I won that tournament, and obviously, you know, we know what happened in '96 and '98. So really, really, Nigeria should be winning, you know, three back to back. It's ridiculous, really. You know that group of players, you know, should be winning everything on the continent, just like Egypt did a few years later. You know, imagine that group of players, you know, not in the same league in terms of the quality as us. You know, they won three and we only won one. So, but that's life, you know, you know, you move on. And yeah, so that time at the camp was disappointing for me personally, even though we won. You know, it wasn't, not the same feelings that I have, that I'm sure that most of the guys did.
And of course, fast forward, the World Cup. You were, I'm sure you probably had a premonition that you were going to be selected. You went for the training camp, you were selected. Yeah. So talk us through the World Cup. You were selected eventually. And how did you feel? You were selected for the fourth, and that was the first time Nigeria was qualifying as well too.
Yeah, you know, the World Cup is I don't look back on it with much fondness, you know, but why would I? I didn't play, you know, myself, you know, like Victor, one or two others, you know, when you go to any kind of tournament, that's what you go to, therefore to play. You only get one opportunity in your life. And that was my one opportunity. At least Victor went, you know, back in 98 and shone. So he's a lucky boy. So yeah, you know, even just 1 minute of action would have been better, you know, than zero, especially for a striker as well. It's almost unheard of for a striker from any tournament or from any nation to go to a World Cup or big tournament and not see some action, because even if you want to keep, you know, your starter fresh, your first starter, at least your second, depending on how you play, you usually want to bring in another striker to keep them sharp as well and keep them involved. So that was really frustrating and disappointing. I could use, you know, much stronger words, I'm sure, but I think you know, you get my point. And so that's where something, you know, that, you know, West Half didn't manage things, you know, very well at all. And that's, I think, you know, his big failing, because I think if that was done properly, we would have advanced further than we did. You know, you have to utilize the squad and put aside your personal agendas, you know, to make sure that the team moves forward. So if you don't do that, and that's what happens, you know, that was a golden opportunity for Nigerian football and Nigerian sport, where most of the players were still quite unknown. Once they know you, as I say, you know, the cat is out the bag, people know you, they start to plan for you because they know just what you are capable of as a group. That was still quite a new group. Even though we won, you know, the Nations Cup before, people were still a bit, okay, I don't know much about this Nigerian boy, that Nigerian player. I know the name, I've seen what he can do, but people are still a little bit unsure. And you have to take advantage as best you can. And some nations have done it, you know, from the continent, and some haven't. And we were one of the group, you know, for the first, especially your first time round, that failed to go as far, really, as we could have done.
So, well, not pretty good one there. But obviously, you agree that that was a very good squad, in depth and
excellent squad.
Was a very good squad. So, who was your best mate in that squad? You know, eventually when you that you think that okay, well, you got along with this person.
Well, I room with Sunday or Lisa, you know, for I think pretty much every trip that I was on, every camp I was called to. You know, with Peter Rufai, I think once or twice, but you know, so yeah, I was close with Sunday. I would get on great with Victor, you know, great sense of humor, and yeah, so you know, I had a lot of time, you know, for a lot of the boys, you know, Emmanuel, Amunike. Obviously, it's a bit more uneasy with people who play the same position as you. So with Yakini and with Amunike, it was a bit different. It's only in later years when I've seen Daniel, because he obviously came to England. We crossed paths a couple of times. I've seen him a few times as well over the years. I've not seen him for quite a long time now. So once you retire, things sort of calm down a little. You know, there's no tension, is there? There's no pressure. So people generally become a bit more cordial, a bit more friendly. You know, so now with Daniel, I'd be cool. But then I think there was that sort of, it was like a simmering, a respect, but also a bit of, I don't really like you being here, you know, and vice versa. Yeah, but I respect him, and I'm sure that he respected me, you know, because when you come to England anyway, especially when you play as a striker, you know about physicality and that kind of, and that side of the game.
As I begin to round up, because I'm conscious of the fact that you have an engagement, what is your take on the current Super Eagles? What do you think? What's your general impression of the current Super Eagles as it is at the moment? I know you've covered Nigeria over the years at different times as a commentator with the big stations across the world. What's your impression of the Nigerian Super Eagles currently?
I must admit, you know, the last 18 months or so, I've not seen much of our boys, and because I don't see a lot of the qualifiers, but generally I only see us when we get to tournaments. But I do know, from what I've seen based on AFCON in the last few tournaments, I'm disappointed with the level of consistency or lack of, because we still have good players. We don't always have the best on the continent, but we should always be fighting, you know, to be at least in the semi-finals. You know, you can't win every tournament. It doesn't matter how good you are. You know, Brazil never used to win anything or everything when Pelé played, you know, with Cruyff, with Holland. They never won anything, you know. So, and I struggle to see a real identity with how we want to play. I know it's difficult because you have players from who are playing in different countries all the time. But you know, that's the name of the game. You have to find a way to play. I think we have some good players, you know, we have some good attacking players. So still, I think our Achilles is usually our defense, or that ability to protect the defense. So I'd like to see a bit more steel with the way we play, because we know that tournament football is generally about how good you are defensively, and then you allow one or two people to shine in the final third of the field. So Gerard Rohr has a lot of work to do to impress me anyway, in terms of getting that level of performance up on a consistent basis, because without that you can't win, you know, any tournament. Right now Senegal over the last few years has probably had the best group of players, and they've not won anything, you know, but Algeria have also been very good, and that's where the champions right now. So I think maybe we're maybe third or fourth spot on the continent. Ghana always produces, you know, some good players, and Ivory Coast of course will come good again. So we're just in the mix, and when you're in the mix you have to be, you know, I think then you need more of an, you know, identity than ever. Without him, we didn't need one. We just had the best players, period.
There you have it. I trust you enjoyed that wonderful interview with Efan Ekoku, where he shared about how he started in football and his brief and stint with the Super Eagles of Nigeria. And until we come your way again when we bring you another interesting edition. We implore you to keep listening to Sport Africana. Again, please subscribe to our podcast on the various podcast directory. You can check on Apple, Deezer, Google Podcast, Spotify, and subscribe to our podcast. And you can check us out on our various social media platform, such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All you just need to do is type in Sport Africana and it'll come up. And please, we really implore you to leave your comments. Let us know what we are doing wrong and what we need to do, or what we need to do to improve. So until we come here again, have a wonderful day and stay blessed.